kiss your lips a thousand times, and more times than I can count. I have called you mine. You have stood by me in my
life. From New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about how melatonin reduces blood pressure and tunes up disrupted circadian rhythms. That's very important. Then we're going to talk about, can sesame-based ingredients, that would be halva or sesame tahini paste, can that reduce oxidative stress? Latest research from Rio de Janeiro University in Brazil, and very important, I'll explain why. Also, some University of Florida scientists discovered Antarctic sponges that from which they extracted an ingredient that kills MRSA. And MRSA is the methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. It soon could be just a thing of the past. Right now, it's killing tens of thousands of Americans a year. For those who like a lot of potatoes, think twice by overeating them, because they can raise your blood pressure. Who says? Harvard Medical School, published in the British Medical Journal. Also today, horseradish. I like to make horseradish from scratch. It's easy. You could do the same. And then to marinate different things in it, like asparagus, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, your cruciferous vegetables, because in and of itself, it is a very powerful cruciferous. If you looked at it in a grocery store, you probably would never recognize the actual horseradish root. So most people buy it processed, which is still okay. But it has very strong anti-cancer potential. A new study from the University of Illinois will explore why we should be having horseradish in our diet. And then I'm a big believer in polyphenols. I've done a lot of work with people, lots of people, who've been able to change their diet, radically so in many cases, and we've seen the results. Just this last week, Lou Anne Panessi read a letter from one. There was another letter that when she's on next, she'll read from a woman who had stage 4 cancer. She was given a short period of time to live, and all she did was just change to a protocol of lots of polyphenols, and including raw and sprouted nuts and juices. There's a lot to the protocol. I don't want to oversimplify it, but it's not a medical protocol. It's lifestyle and behavior. Well, today she's cancer-free, and the doctors can't understand it, but it's a fact. So for those of you who want to help your health, polyphenols, which are antioxidants from plant foods that work in the body to enhance our health in a variety of ways, are one way that we should do this. So we're going to talk about that. Then today, I'll play part two of John Stossel's report. I didn't have a chance yesterday. I will today on our failing school system. Some of the things he said I would agree with. Some I would offer different opinion. The solutions I would definitely offer different opinion. Let's begin. And I will be taking calls later on. And our call-in number is 888-874-4888. Now, melatonin is something that we create in our brains. It is a hormone. And the older that we get, let's say from age 27, we're technically into old age. So you have to differentiate a chronological age. That's your number of years you have been born till that date. Let's say you're 27, and then you have your biological age, and that will be determined by a multifactorial input. For example, how much stress you were under, the type of childhood you had, the environment that you grew up in, the type of nutrients or lack thereof that you've had that are essential to your well-being, the amount of exercise you've done. All these things come into play when it tells our genes how we should feel and how they should respond. So we may be 27, chronologically, but we may be 60 biologically if we have hurt ourselves, if we've done things we shouldn't have, including with diet, etc. Or we may be younger if we've done a lot of good for ourselves. Well, melatonin is just one of those very important nutrients. It is a hormone. It comes on at night, but it doesn't come on in its full capacity if there's light in the room. Mind you, even when your eyelids are closed and you're in your deepest sleep, your deep rhythmic sleep, the body still perceives light through the eyelid, so it still believes that you could be anabolic, so you don't get your full secretion of the catabolic melatonin. In any case, the older you become, the more you're going to have problems with your circadian rhythms. They're going to be disrupted. For example, blood pressure not only tends to increase, but also becomes more irregular. And melatonin helps to correct both. So by the time you are, let's say, 50, you're already going to have a lot of problems with sleep and wakefulness. And here's where melatonin comes in. Because melatonin, taken about an hour before you go to bed, will reduce significantly your blood pressure. Now, this is something brand new. We knew it was extraordinarily important as an antioxidant, and that slows down the oxidative stress. It protects your cells in the brain, your central nervous system, and the rest of your body. But we didn't know until now that it will reduce blood pressure. And it has a hypotensive effect. And the maximum systolic blood pressure lowering effect of melatonin generally happens between 3 a.m. and 8 a.m. And by the way, if you didn't know it, between 3 a.m. and 8 a.m. is when most Americans have their heart attacks and strokes. Yeah. Nighttime and morning blood pressure decrease more profoundly when you're using melatonin. So if you're at risk of high blood pressure, or if you have high blood pressure, and if you've had trouble with your circadian rhythms, if your heart rate is off, if your body temperature is off, all these are part of your circadian rhythm, and you want that to be smoothed out, then take, I would say, 1 to 3 milligrams of melatonin. From Rio de Janeiro University, has published in the Journal of Medicinal Food, the sesame seed. Now, white sesame seeds, black sesame seeds, they're both beneficial. You're not getting any nutrients from the shell. That's your fiber. That's good for you. It's the oil that's inside. And according to this research, it is good for lowering oxidative stress, especially if you have elevated blood pressure, elevated cholesterol, or you have type 2 diabetes. And multiple clinical trials reported an increased level of antioxidants and a reduction in oxidative stress. The bottom line here is you want very little oxidative stress because then you're not processing free radicals and inflammation. But when you're exercising, you increase oxidative stress. So that's why you should always take some vitamin C and vitamin E and coenzyme Q10 immediately after you're exercising. That traps the free radicals, reduces oxidative stress, so you've gotten the benefit of the exercise. You have not gotten any of the downside of oxidative stress. So sesame seeds are good because they reduce oxidative stress in any form. And just this morning I had in my whatever anyone chooses to call it, because most people think it looks like a bowl of mud, but I have everything in the world in there. And I just happened to put a teaspoon of raw sprouted sesame paste tahini in there, which is extremely good. Next is we have tens of thousands of Americans dying of antibiotic-resistant bacterial infections in hospitals. They didn't have the infection when they went in. Hospitals today, even with their efforts to keep them sterile, they can't. Someone sneezes. Now, you don't know that they sneezed, and you go into a room, you touch a doorknob, you touch a railing of a bed, the nurse does, Maybe an orderly didn't wash their hands after cleaning up after someone. They go into another room. There's lots of cross-contamination. It's massive. So people get these infections. MRSA. Methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. But here's the good news. University of South Florida scientists have tested an extract from a sponge found in the Antarctic. The sponge extract known as Dendrilia, Dendrilla, membranosa, membranosa. It yields a new natural chemical which can kill up to 98% of MRSA cells. And that's terrific. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal of the American Chemical Society's Organic Letters. So, something new, something natural, something better than any of the antibiotics that can help save thousands, tens of thousands of lives. And from Harvard Medical School, quote, higher intakes of boiled, baked, and mashed potatoes and French fries is associated with an increased risk of developing high blood pressure in adult women and men. This is published in the British Medical Journal. Well, yes and no. I would challenge this. First, for those who don't know it, potatoes are one of nature's really healthy items to eat. And in this study, they followed 187,000 men and women over 20 years. Here's the problem. When you're giving someone a questionnaire over 20 years, and you're using the total amount of potatoes, how many of those potatoes are French fries? Because when people eat French fries, it's deep fried and it's got lots of salt on it. That causes in of itself an increase in the risk of hypertension. Just potato chips is increased with all the salt in it. But French fries really is bad because you get all the trans fats also. But if you were to bake a potato at not a high temperature, it does not increase the risk of high blood pressure. So I think they have to relook at this. But what it does tell us is potatoes are good, but stay away from the salt on them. That makes a difference. And finally, horseradish's anti-cancer potency is recorded in this first-time study at the University of Illinois. Now, we know that horseradish contains compounds that could help detoxify and eliminate cancer-causing compounds in the body. And the cancer-causing compounds are known as glucosinolates. Gluco, G-L-U-C-O, sinolates, S-I-N-O-L-A-T-E-S. Now, these glucosinolates undergoes a series of chemical reactions that activates enzymes involved in detoxifying of cancer-causing molecules. In addition, one of the anti-carcinogenic elements is allyl isothiocyanates, and these have 90% absorption when ingested, and horseradish is loaded with these. So you've got all kinds of good anti-cancer properties in there, including what is known as the compound is produced from the hydrolysis of sinigrin by enzymes. And they did this study, and they found that horseradish can just really make a difference with cancer. So use horseradish as a condiment, and it's very tasty. Oh, and by the way, I mentioned polyphenols and why they're so good. And all of the epidemiological studies, all the meta-analysis, definitely show that the more polyphenols you have in your diet, these are plant polyphenols, the greater protection from cancer, from cardiovascular disease, diabetes, osteoporosis, and neurodegenerative diseases. This particular study was published by the National Center for Biotechnology, and it says, quote, there are many different kinds and types of polyphenols that benefit us, such as isoflavones, and those are estrogen-like, and they come from soy foods, catechins, and those come from teas like green tea and black tea, and ellagic acid, and that's found in pomegranates and strawberries and cranberries, raspberries and walnuts and pecans, and anthocyanins, and those are found in red, purple, and blue colored fruits and vegetables. And the more of these you have, lower your cholesterol, lower your blood pressure, improved artery, which is your endothelial function, prevent platelet clumping, which prevents stroke, improve arterial flexibility, which prevents heart attacks, and improves and extends your lifespan. So that is why you want to have more of your fruits and vegetables and nuts. Walnuts are number one when it comes to the amount of nutrients they're allowing the body to have that are released into your systems. That's why you should always have some nuts each day into your diet. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a brief break and come back. We have a whole lot more to share with you. Please stay with us. Now we're going to play part two of a 2020 piece on ABC with John Stossel, where he was challenging the quality of American public education. Let's hear a few, maybe 5 minutes of what he has to say, then I want to respond to it.
Yes. Here is one of them.
Good morning, I'm Fred Stevens, Director of Programs for Exceptional Children.
This is where some of the money goes to educational specialists, the Director of Programs for Exceptional Children, the school principal, a resource teacher, a gym teacher, the school counselor, and the district's special ed coordinator. But they hadn't done much for the boy who can't read.
Have you had the opportunity to counsel with Dorian?
Well, first of all, I really hadn't had the opportunity to really counsel with him. I'll be frank with you.
The principal said Dorian was doing well.
I've seen great progress in him, so I don't have any concerns.
The meeting went on for 45 tedious minutes. Dorian looked defeated. His mother just kept raising the one issue that concerned her most.
The only issue I have is his reading level, and that's what's important to me.
All right, come on in and have a seat.
So we decided we'd send Dorian to a private learning center, Sylvan. Could they teach Dorian to read when the South Carolina public schools hadn't?
All right, click on OK for me.
You bet. After just 72 hours of instruction using computers and workbooks, Dorian's reading was up more than two grade levels. His mother loves the private program.
They're doing what they're supposed to do. They are on point, but I can't say the same for the public schools.
No, she can't. South Carolina, over 12 years, spent nearly $100,000 on Dorian's education, but they left him behind.
When we continue, what if schools had to get good results or flunk out of business?
In San Jose, California, parents want to get their kids into Fremont Union schools. They're so much better than neighboring schools that parents sometimes cheat to get their kids in. What's cheating? Pretending to live in the district when you don't. Inspector John Lozano goes door to door to check if kids really live where they say they live.
Is here?
Yeah.
Really? Oh, great. Nice to finally meet you. How long you guys been here?
Then Lozano says he still needs to look inside the house to make sure she really lives there.
I don't mean to embarrass you. So
he sounds nice, but think about what he's doing. The school district police go into your daughter's bedroom. He even goes through drawers and closets if he has to.
Well, we have a computer. We have some 17 magazines. We have pictures of the student and her friends on the wall.
This girl passes.
I was looking for...
But the grandmother who listed this address is caught. People who answer the door say she doesn't live here.
She says that she lives here and that her grandson's going to live here with her. That's so they can go to school at Homestead High School.
Oh, I have two. Yeah.
Caught. She's definitely caught.
2 days later, I talked to the grandmother.
I was actually crying.
It's kind of creepy that they force you to go to the black market to get your kid a better education.
I was crying in front of this 14 years old. Why can't they just let parents get in the school of their choice.
Why can't they? Changing schools can change a child's life. Patty Bauer's kids were stuck in a public school that wasn't teaching them. But then they got McKay scholarships, which let them attend this private school that works with kids who have special needs.
They would invite...
Joey has been brought up 4 grade levels in reading. Alan's gone from C's and D's to be an honor roll student.
But last week, a Florida court killed a similar choice program. And Patty fears her kids will soon be forced back into public school.
If they take the McKay scholarship away, I don't think, I'm sorry. I don't think Joey will finish school.
Why can't she choose her child's school? Most countries that beat America on international tests give parents that choice.
There were a few people who got very, very high scores.
Here in Belgium, the government spends less than American schools do on each student, but the money's attached to the kids, so they can go wherever they want, to a state-run school, or a Catholic school, or a Muslim, or a Montessori school.
Because of that choice, it makes it a lot harder for schools because there's a lot of pressure.
Kate van den Sauvel runs a state school in Belgium. She says because the money is attached to the kids, she has to please the parents, and that makes a world of difference.
If we don't offer them what they want for their child, they won't come to our school.
So she provides extras like cooking, more sports programs, furniture building, electronics.
Is this what you like best?
Yeah.
You think that America doesn't leave any child behind, but I think that we don't leave any child behind and that you guys have some kind of a problem with that.
I wouldn't send my child to an American public school, not even for $1 million.
Her son lives in Belgium now, but when he was 6, his family lived in America, and his mom was upset when he was assigned to a school.
In America, I sort of had to beg for, please, please give me a good school for my child. And here in Belgium, they're all over the place.
Because if they're not good, they're gone.
You shut down bad schools. That's healthy. Because it says to people that incompetence won't work.
So the fact that some schools fail and close, that's the success of
that's
choice?
A good thing. That's a good thing. That's a real good
thing.
What
happens to those kids in those schools?
Then they'll go to another school. Why should we keep them in a school that's not working? That's what we've been doing for decades.
Giving kids a choice forces schools to try harder.
You have to be innovative all the time. You have to look for new means of working, new means of thinking.
Onions, ham, and salami.
So if we don't succeed, we just run out of business.
I think it's a pity that American children don't have the same opportunities and same choices as we have, but if you're used to it, maybe it's just normal.
No choice is just normal in America.
When okay, now, returns. a couple of issues. One is, when you look at European schools, you have that there's a lot of relationship between the parent, the student, the teacher in the institution. There's a greater cooperation, as there once was in the United States. And there was accountability. There was a certain expectation of behavior. There was a certain desire to learn. There was also an awareness that not all teachers were equal. We all remember, everyone listening right now remembers their favorite teachers. Those are remarkable people. They'll always have a place in our hearts and minds our entire life because we were... In our formative years, they were there to encourage us, to help us, to work with us, because they cared about us. I remember there was Miss Helmick in my high school, and I considered her the best teacher that I had. Most other people also liked her because you could always talk with her. She never let you get away with anything, but she was also willing to, every night, when everyone else, those of us who were athletes, were staying, you could walk down the halls when everyone else gone home, you'd see her door open. She'd always be working with someone who was maybe a little slower learner, having problems. And then if there was a problem at home, the teacher wanted to know about it. The teacher would then speak with the parents, try to help them with whatever issue it was. And if someone was really slow, they would go to summer school, or they would have to take it over again. Today we have this idea, and it's not in all schools, and it's certainly not by all teachers, that all students somehow should be equal. and they're not, and that everyone has the same motivation to learn, and they don't. I do not believe that we take the time as a society to look honestly at the type of home environment and its complexities that children are faced with today, and help at that level if possible, or at least understand where the problem is. If you have a bully, if you have a kid that is acting out, if you have someone that is sitting in class and now students are angry if they can't use their cell phones and then condemn the teacher. And if a teacher, and I know a lot of teachers, there are a lot of teachers in this audience, but one teacher told me that she simply tried with the parent to let the parent know that their son was going to have problems if he didn't have some sense of decorum and discipline. He would act out, he was a bully. And so the parent came to class and really read this person the Riot Act and wanted to get them thrown out as a teacher. And she's always trying to do is to help the kid before the real world takes hold of this kid, because it will be merciless on him and likely go from school to the prison system. So we also have to put into this calculus that there are some really not qualified parents. Not everyone makes a good parent. Wish it were true, but it's not. Not every parent cares about their children the way they should. Even those from good, let's say, good economic standing. In fact, a friend of mine, a physician pediatrician, was also the court-appointed physician for the Maryland School District and also around Washington, D.C. So it was an upper middle class, professional class, and wealthy suburb. So who were the kids who were having problems in school and with drugs and ending up in the prison, the delinquent system? White upper middle class kids. Rarely were there any blacks because they couldn't afford to be in the neighborhood. So this is not about kids of color being the problem. It is about the largest single group of problem children in America are white kids. The largest single number of drug users by an enormous margin, 2-to-1, white kids. Why don't we ever hear about it? Why don't we hear about the problems within the white preferred schools where the kids are on a higher degree of kids are on Ritalin and diagnosed with ADD and ADHD that don't really have it? We will never challenge the parenting. We will not challenge any of this. We never challenge the administration of schools. One of the biggest problems between the United States and any place else in the world is we are top-heavy with administrators. We have a Kafkaesque administration where the people, the administrators, the specialists are paid astronomical amounts of money. Most of the money goes to them, not to the kid. In Europe, it goes to the kid and to their actual education. So then we wonder, why can't Johnny read? He's in 11th grade and he can't read. Why are we graduating completely illiterate kids? They're functionally illiterate. They don't know about the world. They can't calculate. They can't. They cannot come to grips. And we say it's about the school. What if it's about the administration of the school, the curriculum of the school, the type of teacher at the school? Not all teachers are the same. Some are exceptional. Some shouldn't be teaching. Then the question is, how can you get rid of a teacher who's a bad teacher, even a sexual predator teacher? They're still in the system. And then what about grade fixing? This is from last week, and it says, no, it's just from 3 days ago. Quote, the grade fix is in. Cheat principal lands $157,000 a year gig. From Susan Edelman, quote, the city will not appeal a decision to dismiss cheating charges against former Dewey High School principal Kathleen Evelyn and will keep her on as a six-figure administrator. An internal probe had found that Evelyn and her assistant principals at a Brooklyn high school ran a grade-fixing scheme called Project Graduation. Hundreds of students who dubbed it Easy Pass got credits for sham classes with no instruction. So they just wanted to get them all out, so they gave them all good grades. Even if they were completely illiterate, they passed. Do you think this is an exception? This is rampant. Cheating is rampant. Then you have this. You have to put all these into the calculus. This is an entire page. An article by Anna Davies. Quote, who earns the grades? On a recent weekday night, Ben is holed up in his Bushwick, Brooklyn apartment doing homework, reading a separate piece for an eighth grade reaction paper. And to pay his rent, Ben is 27, already has an Ivy League graduate degree and several national arts awards under his belt. A freelance writer, he has been hired by Harried Park Slope mom to help her 13-year-old daughter keep her head above water in honors classes at a small private school. Ben pockets $350 for each 500-word writing assignment. The mom, operating under the polite fiction quote, "I write a paper that is to be used as a guideline, but I think we all know that that's not true." Ben, who advertises his service on Craigslist, is just one of many members of the local creative class padding his or her unsteady income by taking on middle school assignments. And outsourcing homework is just one more way New York City parents can ensure their privileged offspring get the very best in life. And while they're happy to haggle over fees with nannies and comparison shop for laptops, many area parents are willing to pay a premium to get their kid an A. Quote, "We all have assistance, right?" I explained to my daughter. It was the same thing. I want to help my daughter, an eighth grader, and in a gift and talented program at a public school. And so they get someone who does the, for $200 an hour, does all the homework for the kid, studies all the classes for the kid, and now they have tutors that will tutor the kid on what the test is going to be, so the kid who knows nothing about the topic, zero, will get an A. So now we're creating all these A students, and so many of them have cheated. Their parents have cheated. So that's what we've come to. When we went to school, if you got an A, it's because you worked. You know, you studied or you're smart. If you didn't, whatever grade you got, you got. So this is also part of the problem. So here's my question to you. What do you see the solutions to be so that we are actually able to help the student have a quality education where they are taught critical thinking skills? In the midst of many schools that have no discipline in the classroom, where police are in the classes with zero tolerance and will arrest a kid for the slightest of missteps, where frequently teachers are feeling under pressure and many are just getting through in spite of the fact that they know that there are many ways they could help their students and frequently can't. And all of this is overseen by an army of bureaucrats who are making big salaries, and no one wants to change it. And no one can change it. It's too big to change. There's just too many people making too much money, and the unions have aligned themselves with the politicians and say, keep giving us what we want, don't meddle. But what if in the process of giving you what you want, the whole system has been diverted away from helping a kid learn? That's my question. I'd like to see a response now. 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. We're going to take a break. Before we take a break, I was thinking about this early this morning. I was thinking when I was out doing my road work, I have a long time to think when I'm doing long distance training, and I was thinking how many soldiers who have fought in Vietnam, in Korea, many are still alive, in Afghanistan, Iraq, how many would stand up for our constitutional rights, our Bill of Rights? How many would stand up against the corruptions and excesses of our government? And that begs the question, if you're willing and completely obliging to go into a foreign country and to disrupt the lives of people that you know nothing about except what you've been propagandized, if you're willing to take a life as a drone operator sitting in an air-conditioned booth out in the Las Vegas, near Las Vegas in the desert, completely protected, and you see someone, but you can't really see them that well, and you don't know how old they are, but you've been told in rules of engagement, if it looks like it's a 12-year-old boy or over, consider all 12-year-olds and older to be enemy combatants. How do you know their age? You don't. You have to guess. And what if you know there's going to be a lot of collateral damage, innocent people killed, so you can get a targeted person? Would you have the courage to stand up against any governmental agency that was committing crimes against humanity to its own citizens, like the United States? Rare is that soldier who would do that. But there was one person who refused to be a soldier because he refused to do that. And he got it right. And everyone else got it wrong. Listen to what he has to say.
My conscience won't let me go shoot my brother or some darker people or some poor hungry people in the mud for big powerful America and shoot them for what? They never called me again. They never lynched me. They never put no dogs on me. They never robbed me of my nationality, raped and killed my mother and father. Well, I'm going to shoot them for what? How can I go shoot them? Them little poor little black people, little babies and children and women. How can I shoot them poor people? I would just take me to jail.
Ali more than held his own against students who had a far better formal education than he.
I'm saying you're talking about me about some draft, and all of you white boys are breaking your neck to get to Switzerland and Canada and London. I'm not going to help nobody get something my Negroes don't have. If I'm going to die, I'll die now right here fighting you. If I'm going to die, you my enemy. My enemy is the white people, not Viet Congs or Chinese or Japanese. You my opposer when I'm on freedom. You my opposer when I want justice. You my foes when I want equality. You won't even stand up for me in America for my religious beliefs, and you want me to go somewhere and fight, but you won't even stand up for me here at home.
Let us remember that. He was absolutely right. Where were all those self-righteous people willing to go across the world to kill people they knew nothing about, who had done nothing to them, would represent absolutely no threat to anyone? Because of Robert McNamara, because the genocidalist John F. Kennedy, because of Harriman, because of McMundy, because of all the best and brightest out of Harvard and Yale, said it was the thing to do. And why? Why didn't we learn this lesson? Because we're still doing it today. Good for you, Muhammad Ali. You had it right, and everyone else had it wrong. Now let's say hello to, a whole lot of people are calling in right now. Please be patient. Let's go through them real quick. Let's say hello to Bernard from Queens. Hi, your turn.
Oh, good afternoon, Gary. Gary, yes. It's good to hear your voice. You know, I tell you, Gary, when I went to school, we had teachers that were dedicated. Today, we have teachers that don't care. They just say, I'm just there to get a paycheck. And I had to, when I was in high school, I went to vocational high school. I had to go to the principal of the school and ask for more math, because they didn't teach enough algebra or trigonometry or the advanced math. And the principal told me, we're here to teach you a trade. We're not here to prepare you for college. And I said, I still need that education anyway, regardless. And I had to go to a couple of teachers in the school to fight for me, to get me the teachers to teach me the math. Today you have all these programs, STEM programs, only funded by private, not by the so-called tax money that they rip off from the public, and this so-called lotto money for education. I think there's a bigger scam going, and I think those people belong in jail for what they're doing with this money. Thank
Bernard,
you for this, Gary.
My pleasure to have you on. Thank you, Bernard. Now let's say hello to Edward from New Jersey. Edward, your turn. You're on the air, Edward. Speak up.
The public school cannot succeed because it is by its nature a failure. A board of education is not qualified for what they do. A board of education, as for example in Hawthorne in New Jersey, is an assembly of mental midgets, intellectual invalids, nascent Neanderthals, and nefarious nerds. You cannot succeed with a superintendent who's paid with combined benefits, with merit pay, four children in the schools, $250,000 a year, for an invisible presence. I recently wrote, and I have been I'm an educator, grades 11 and 12, especially grade 12, pre-college. I have taught in two private schools, Also, I was a substitute in the local public schools. I wrote a treatise with the title School Days. Days is D-A-Z-E. School Days, New Rules, No Fools. You cannot change the public schools. We need to do is start from the beginning with a focus on first of all, on literacy, practical, essential literature, the fundamentals of history, especially the origins of war, and especially the origins of the American wars, all of which were frauds, and a focus on civic science, a focus on the politicians at all levels, local, county, state, and federal, and how the city can focus on them and demand accountability for what they do. And when they are unaccountable, as they are in New Jersey, at all levels, remove them. And when we have this, then we will have relevant education, and the only way that you will do that is in the homeschool. It will never be achieved in the public schools.
We want to take another call here. We have Harvey from New York. Hi, Harvey, your turn.
Hi, Gary. First, let me say thank you for having the phrase education and Montessori in the same paragraph. I've never heard that before. And if I may quickly, an anecdote. Two summers ago on the 7 train going to Manhattan, a small kid comes in with his parents on the train. I make room for him. He sits down. He opens up a book, and he's writing. I'm a pretty smart guy. I have a master's degree. And this little kid is writing his homework, so I ask the parents' permission to talk to him. It finds out this 4-year-old kid has almost as good handwriting as I do, and he's from Montessori. That's as random as you can get. And if you're talking about problems, here's a 4-year-old kid who's already writing his homework in his spare time. I think it speaks for itself. And by the way, I'll probably see you Saturday at Union Square as well.
Great. Thank you, Harvey. Appreciate your input. Again, this isn't a forum for you to share your points of view. And we will continue with this series because we have a lot of different people who have a lot of different questions in their mind. And a little later, I'll take a few more calls. Again, our number is 888-874-4888. But right now, only on the topic of how would you see our educational system and how would you suggest that we improve it, because that's the issue. Now I want to set some time aside to share some what I consider important information, because when I'm lecturing around the United States, I'm frequently asked questions, of course, about health and aging and disease, and I address those, but also about how precarious our lives are today as compared to previous generations, where we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. We don't know if we're going to have an earthquake and the big one in California, or we're going to have a tornado in Texas, which just happened 3 weeks ago that was unexpected, where you suddenly have the coldest day in mid-May ever in New York, or by 1 degree. And so we have all these anomalies. And then it gets to the economy. And I'm merely giving a heads up because I believe the solution should be, I'll tell you the solution after I show you what's going on. I believe you cannot trust the people on television who are telling you how good everything is because they're using the Wall Street Index as their marker of success. First, it is not real. It is a mammoth balloon. It is overvalued by at least 200%. It's almost at 18,000. Realistically, it should be about 6,000. So sooner or later, that equity market is going to collapse. But how do I know that we're in trouble? Because we have an enormous shrinking middle class. How big is our middle class? Our middle class is over 200 million people. So it's about, it's almost two-thirds of the American population, from the high end to the low end. Now, this middle class is not making the type of wages they once made. They're having to work multiple jobs. They're frequently on food stamps, And yet the president just signed a legislation to take away $9.2 billion out of the food stamp program. They should have put another $10 billion into the food stamp program because we have almost 50 million, 48.6, but you got to know that's ultra-conservative. It's more likely 50 million food insecure people, meaning they don't have enough food to eat. Well, if they don't have enough food to eat, they're not going to have enough money to spend in the local economy. At one time, a dollar would go around an economy anywhere from 65 to 85 times. It's simple. You have some extra money. You want to go to a movie theater, so you buy a movie ticket. The person owning the theater then goes next door to eat dinner. The person that owns the restaurant or works there as a waiter then goes over and puts some food into the dry cleaner, and so it goes. And so everyone is spending that money around a community. Today, it's only about seven times because it's all by credit cards going to multinational banks and it doesn't circulate. So you have to look at what's happening to the middle class to know whether or not we're in a recession, which we are, or how bad it is, and it's getting worse. But you have to look at the retail because when people don't have extra money, they're in debt, they're concerned about how they're going to pay their credit card, they stop the same amount of buying. They generally buy only what's necessary. For example, in the last 12 months, JCPenney's down 15%, Nordstrom down 16%, Kohl's down 10%, Macy's down 15%, JCPenney was down 2.8%. That's bad news for retailers. It's also bad news for people who would be working there because these are just samples of people where whole industries are down. And we're not looking at them. We're looking at the banking market. But the banking market's not good either. And all that means is that we're in deep debt. We've lived so long on debt that we don't even think about staying within our budget. Let me give examples. Now, these are accurate, and it shows you what you have not been told. If you look at Portugal, which is considered a financial basket case, they're running 131% debt to their gross domestic product, meaning the amount of income coming in from all sources versus what they owe. Italy's 139%, and Italy is an absolute chaos because it's one of the largest economies in Europe, and I think it's the third largest economy in Europe, and it's right up there with France and right behind Germany, and it's hurting. And they're on a major austerity program, and what they've been doing is they've been printing money through quantitative easing, meaning they have nothing to back up the money, but they're printing extra euros. They should go back to the lire. They should get out of the European Union. I wish they would. It would be better for them. But they have massive unemployment in Italy. Their pensions are being cut. And so you don't hear about it. You wouldn't know if you went to some of the beautiful places, and there are many beautiful places with beautiful people in Italy, because you don't see the poverty. But if you stayed with people and you saw how they're trying to make ends meet, you would see that. Here in the United States, we see skyscrapers galore everywhere. We see businesses. We see the control of the business class dominating the news. They have $25 trillion in debt. $25 trillion. Then we have personal debt. This is the total people living in the United States. $13 trillion in mortgages, $17 trillion total. We 1.3 trillion in student debt and unfunded liabilities that the government is responsible for, but they don't have the money for it. $102 trillion. Medicare liability, $27 trillion. And then you have the government's total debt. Now, you think the government's total debt is what they tell you, which is $18.2 trillion. And or $19.2 trillion, and our gross domestic product is $18.2 trillion, which is 105%. That's not true. The total U.S. debt is $64.8 trillion. They're just not showing you all the other types of debt. So you add up all the debt that we have, and you're at the following number: 1,238% debt to gross domestic product. Our total gross domestic debt is $226 trillion. So we have more debt than the European Union countries combined. and yet it's the largest economy in the world, the European Union. But we have more debt. So we can't pay back this debt. We will never be able to pay back this debt, and we've been living on debt. So as long as people could create debt, they could do things. But now we have to ask ourselves, if we are shrinking from having viable income, viable savings, viable quality of life, and if there will be pockets and green zones like San Francisco and certain areas of Washington, D.C., and certain areas of New York, and certain areas of Denver and other metropolitan areas that will have a high income group of people, and the quality of life will be good, and the cost of living there is good, but we are in a recession. We are in it. It's not that it's in the future, because the middle class, the people with this debt, are in a recession. This is undeniable because we have a slowdown. How else do I mark the slowdown? Look at the Cass Transportation Index. It's down 4.9% on a year-over-year basis. What this means is that a lot less stuff was bought and sold and shipped around the country in April 2016 compared to April 2015. In fact, the Cass Shipping Index declined on a year-over-year basis for 14 consecutive months. That means for 14 months, manufacturers had less stuff being purchased, therefore less stuff being shipped by truck or air transport or cargo ship. So if you're not shipping stuff, it's because people are not buying stuff. So the undeniable evidence that the real economy has been slowing for more than a year. Yet you won't be told that. Look at your railroad activity. It's a key indicator of where the U.S. economy is going. And where it's going is down. 11% down from a year ago. And businesses are selling less, and they're getting rid of their inventories. And as a result, they're getting rid of employees. So everything's affected. So here's my suggestion. I suggest that you get out of debt by doing the following, if you can. If you have a mortgage, I would sell, because I believe that the dollar is going to take a hit within the next 24 months, where other currencies will be more valuable because they'll be backed by gold. The United States has nothing backing it, and it has the highest debt to gross domestic ratio in the world. So we are the bully that is telling the rest of the world to be responsible, and we were the ultimate irresponsible financially. Don't buy anything you absolutely don't need. Take your money out of banks, put it into safe places, and only keep in a bank what you need, and then liquefy till you can be solvent. The ideal for the future is being solvent, which gives you freedom, rent rather than own, unless what you own is paid for, in which case it's not a problem, but debt is what you want to get away from. So the idea of buying new cars and homes and clothes, you don't need this for happiness. And yet we've been led to believe that we're only as valuable as our next purchase. We're only as relevant as where we stand in the economic artificial pyramid of consumption. You don't need to send your kid to an Ivy League school. Send them start off with a two-year school to see if they really like school. Are they qualified? Are they going into a class like nursing or engineering, which actually has a future? At least half of the course is taught in all the major schools. There is no future for you. And hence, 55% of all graduates will be at home living with their parents. And the parents will end up being responsible for the debt. And we now have SWAT teams, fully armed, going out to arrest people. And now we have debtors' prison. So you don't pay that debt, you could end up in prison. And if you think that is an overstatement, then you're not aware of how many thousands, tens of thousands of Americans that are now or have been recently in debtors' prisons. These are private prisons, private judges, private courts, private probation officers. But what is also private is the profit that they make. You thought debtors' prisons were over? They're not. So now they've gotten really rough on people. And I'm saying don't play their game. Don't go to their mall stores. Tear up your credit cards. Work with your kids on things that do not require debt in order to enjoy. And if it means they're going to be angry, well, let the cupcake generation be angry. So what? Better that, and let them know about real austerity and why that's responsible. And then start to join co-ops and start to downsize your life to focus on what really is the purpose of life, service for others, character development, moral values, and living a spiritual life. Now, for some, that is a complete abandonment and a shock to what they've been doing. Consumption, consumerism, and debt. Because in the very near future, you're going to find that your debt will be punished by the system that has no sense of appreciation for what you have to do to earn the money. And then let's demand, industry by industry, with general strikes, until it's not just a minimum wage, but a percentage of the profits are set aside to guarantee a living wage for all employees working within any industry. You see, we're making plenty of money in different industries. It's just that the corporate mindset simply doesn't want to share any with the people who helped earn it, and that is the people who work there. They want it all for themselves. Shareholders, Wall Street, the big investment firms, the firms that will buy millions of shares of stock, pension funds, providing you give them a guaranteed return. If that means you have to squeeze every nickel out of every corner of the company, but they always start with employees. Give employees a living wage everywhere and watch the economy begin to crank in again. These are things we can do. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on our next day.